If it feels like no one understands your problems or cares to listen, if it feels like there is no one else in this world who has gone through what you have, if you feel like you're so close to giving up on your goals, your business, your ideal life, but still holding on, Cafe with Monica was made for you. I'll show you how to deal with the everyday and not so everyday situations that surface in the lives of millennials. By sharing my experiences and knowledge, I hope to inform, inspire, and provide solutions to problems that may seem out of reach. So grab your coffee or drink of choice and let's just talk about it. Welcome to Cafe with Monica. This is episode 42. I am Monica, your host, a millennial counselor helping millennials to hashtag just talk about it over coffee. I do want to give a quick disclaimer about this episode. We do touch on topics about sexual abuse, domestic violence, and so I want to make sure that you're in a safe space to listen to this episode. I want to make sure that you have made the necessary precautions to listen to this episode, maybe with a friend or when you feel ready after your healing journey to listen. I hope that you enjoy this episode if you're listening, and I can't wait for you to listen to our story today. Okay, guys, welcome back to the podcast. I am so excited because I have Steph with me here. And for those of you who don't know, Steph has a very special place in my heart because she is someone that made me believe that I can make an impact, even if it was just one person. So when I launched the podcast, no one knew me. I was someone who really wanted to inspire people and make an impact. And Steph showed up to my podcast launch party. And after that, I swear we've just become really good friends. Distance separates us, but I think that doesn't make our friendship any less. I'm really excited to have her. She is the owner of Healthy Lifestyle with Steph. And she is also a certified nutrition coach. So she's just a total badass. Steph, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. I'm excited.
And you look so cute, by the way. Like, you guys, you can't see her outfit, but she is just looking cute. She supported me today for an event, and it was just so excited. But okay, Steph. So you haven't told anybody, like, your journey. I mean, you shared it a little bit on Instagram, right? But you haven't really, like, talked about it on a podcast or anything like that, right?
Correct. I haven't.
So how do you feel about, like, finally sharing it? Any fear, any just like doubts or anything?
It's a little bit, it makes me a little bit nervous, but I'm really excited because I haven't had that opportunity. And so I'm really grateful to have this opportunity so that maybe people can understand more of why this means a lot to me. It has a really special place in my heart to me, and so I'm really glad to share a lot more on here.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah, I think the biggest thing about this podcast is really giving people a space to share their story, because stories are so impactful. Like, that's how we learn things, you know, like even like in history, like we learn better when people tell the story of what happened before so that we could do better and like learn from others. So I want you to tell me your journey. And I know that that's so hard to just put in a few minutes, but tell me, like, where did you grow up? Like, family, like, was it both parents, all that stuff?
I was born in Mexico. Mm-hmm. My parents brought me over to the United States when I was about 3 years old. And we ended up in Dallas. But growing up, the dynamics in my home were very unhealthy. So there was a lot of domestic abuse with my mom and my dad, and then just a lot of things that were going on at the time with me growing up that were unhealthy in many kinds of ways. Also, I experienced sexual abuse as a young girl. I ended up running away from my home, getting pregnant. Then I had my son when I was 16 and, you know, graduated, which was not easy, as you can imagine, you know. Yeah. I was so young at the time, but I was able to graduate. And then after that, I moved to Midland, Texas. So I moved in 2011 to Midland, Texas. And I've been there ever since. A lot of people do know that I was in a domestic mm-hmm. abusive relationship, mm-hmm. myself, toxic relationship at that time. I was in that relationship for about 5 years. So as you can imagine, I had a really unhealthy upbringing, and then I had a really unhealthy young adulthood, really. Mm-hmm. And so I've pretty much had a very unhealthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
I started making like just a lot of mistakes, self-destructing behavior, self-destructive behavior. Pretty much a little bit of what happened as far as.
So that 5 year relationship, was that, is that your son's biological father?
Yes.
Okay. And so was that who you moved to, like in Midland, like in 2011, was that who you moved with? Or?
Yes, I did move with him. We were trying to make things work out. I thought, you know, he was going to change. That didn't happen. At one point, it got really bad to where he beat me up and my son was there. And at that time, Adrian was older. And so he was about probably four, mm-hmm. old enough to know what was going on. Yeah. And he was trying to defend me. That in that moment, I was like, I can't do this. I can't keep living this way because I don't want my son to grow up seeing this. I don't want him to be the one wanting to protect mom, you know? And it just hit me really hard to see that interaction of how things were playing out. And I just remember saying, I don't want to live like this anymore. Mm-hmm. I ended up at a shelter in Midland because at the time I was going to college, I didn't want to leave. I wanted to continue pursuing mm-hmm. what I was pursuing at the time. And my mom kept trying to have me to come back. But mm-hmm. I just really strongly felt like Midland was where I wanted to be and wanted to continue my schooling. And so I stayed there. I've been there since. Wow. haven't came back, only
and
to visit.
Before like that, you know, that like, kind of a eye opener, right? That situation where your son was trying to protect you before then, had there been previous like physical abuse?
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And what, you know, what made you stay? Like, cause I know you mentioned like, you know, he said he was going to change. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking like in that situation, what was like your thought process? Because I know it's so easy to judge. I know we see it and you're like, well, why did she stay? Why didn't she just leave? But somehow, some way, you had hope, or you had, you know, really strong feelings, or what you thought was love, or I don't know. I want to hear what made you stay, you know?
Yeah. I'm a very optimistic person. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, with everything I've already experienced in my life, I became very resilient. And that, I remember the first time I heard that word was with a counselor when I was going, I was about 15 was when I first started going to counseling, therapy. And she said that word to me. And at that time, I didn't know what that word meant. And now that I think back, I get it. I understand why I stayed in that relationship because I am a very optimistic person. I am a resilient person. And I felt like it was going to get better. Like I was thinking, you know, it's okay. And it's going to get better. Like, don't lose faith. Like, let me stick it out so that Adrian could grow up with having a mom and a dad. And I'm just, this is going to work. This might, mm-hmm. this just might work, you know?
Right.
And so I stayed.
Wow. Yeah. So it's like having that optimism and then like growing up and seeing like the personal domestic violence and like in your family with your dad towards your mom. It was normal for you, right? Like it was like that was like normal life. Like,
yeah. Like you just don't know anything else pretty much.
So it's like, oh, you know, I may have said something that pissed him off and he reacted. Like, that's what happens. I mean, that's what my dad did with my mom. So it makes sense.
Yes.
And then you being the optimist, you're like, it's okay. I'm sticking through. I have a child with this person. I'm going to stick it through, because I think that, especially being an optimist, you want to assume the best things in people. Mm-hmm. And you're like, he's a good man. Like, he's a good man. I just think he just gets really upset, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Now you're in a situation where your son steps in because he's like, mom's getting beat up. Like, I need to step in. And I don't want to, and I want to make sure that you're okay with saying the story, but can you tell me a few glimpses of that night? Like, what, you know, what transpired? Like, what was the first thing? Like, did you automatically, like, it click and you, like, left the house, or what was the?
Yeah, no, I don't mind sharing at all. It was heartbreaking, because in that moment, you know, when all, everything was happening, there was just this moment when I see Adrian, you know, crying and trying to do something, and then being told, like, you get out of here or you're going to get it too, was very, I mean, any mom.
You don't mess with my kid.
Do not mess with my kid. Yeah. A mama bear full on, you know. And I was like, I can't do this no more. And I remember just holding him so tight. And at that moment, I didn't care what I had to do. I was willing to do whatever it took to not be in that situation for both of us.
So did you call the cops? Like, what, you know, what did you run? Like, what was the, did you pack your things?
Yeah, no, I got my things and I called a friend that I was going to college with, and she let me stay with her. And then that didn't work out so well. So I just ended up having to go to a shelter, because I didn't know anyone else. And so thankfully there was something like that out there, and I went in there and I stayed there for 3 months. And after that, went on to a transitional home program that Midland offers as well, there for moms that are wanting to continue their education. And I was able to apply there. I was accepted to the program, and I was able to stay there for 2 years, and they helped me go to school and provided a home for me and Adrian. And it was like our own little apartment and everything, and just things started changing from there.
Oh, wow. Were you still in contact with Adrian's dad at that point?
No.
So after that night, was it just like no contact at all?
It was, he tried to contact me, but then he went to jail. And after that, we didn't talk for the longest, and we just kind of moved on, you know. I just kind of moved on, which we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Of course. When you were in the shelter, what was, like, your mind, like, what was your thought process of that? Because, like, I don't know, is that a scary experience, or do you think that people just think it's a scary experience, but ultimately there are people there that care about?
Oh, my God, yes. So I was scared. So scared. I never imagined I would end up it's not something that I, especially being somewhere else where I know nobody, I never thought something like that would happen. So it was, yes, it was very scary. But once I was in there, the love and the support and the services that were offered to me and my son, just it was the best thing I could have ever done for both of us.
Yeah. And when Adrian, because Adrian's four, and I don't know, I mean, sometimes 4-year-olds, like, they just have a lot to say, but when you guys were there, did he ever question, like, why are we here, mom, like, what's going on? Or
he actually really liked that place.
Yeah.
We had roommates, and they had kids, and so he was just living it up because at that time, so they had scheduled eating times.
Gotcha.
And it was so funny because we would always miss the feeding time. So we would end up having to go out to the park and have picnics. Uh-huh. And so even though it was such a dark time, I can see joy in it. And I could see that I did the right choice because I saw that he didn't have to see or go through what we were going through. And mm-hmm. so when I was seeing him smiling, when we were having our picnics at the park, you know, he didn't know we missed dinner or because of the time uh-huh. limit.
For him, that was normal. Yeah. Like, he was like, oh, I'm having a picnic with my mom.
Yeah, he was having such a great time, and it was always a constant reminder to me that I was like, I made the right choice.
Yeah, like, for my son and for myself, right? And accepting those services, which I feel some people, like, they don't want to accept help. There's a lot of pride in asking help for... And even, like, so your parents, like, your family, like, did they reach out? Did they know that you were living in a shelter? What was their response to that? Or did you kind of keep it to yourself?
My mom did know. My brothers mm-hmm. did know. And my family, I'm not as close to my family. So it's just me, my mom, and my brothers, and one of my uncles. He knew about it as well. I'm not sure if the rest of the family knew, but my mom and brothers and my uncle.
But at that point, that didn't matter. What mattered was the people that you wanted to tell.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you mentioned counseling. So was counseling offered in the shelter, or was it like you, like, what are some of the resources? How did you tap into counseling when, you know, with after this happened? And
so, as I mentioned, I started my counseling journey when I was 15, and that was due to the sexual abuse. That's when I was going to counseling the first time. I started going to counseling was for that. And then at the shelter, they offered me counseling as well. And so I started counseling again because after I had Adrian, I kind of stopped going to counseling. I was trying to graduate, so I was not really trying to make time for counseling at that time. And so then once I was at the shelter, I did take the services. Yeah, just started again up with counseling.
Yeah. So I do, and if you're comfortable talking about this, about the sexual abuse, so this happened before you met Adrian's dad?
Yes.
So I don't know if you're okay talking about it, but like, so was it someone close to you? Was it, you know, what, you know, how the doubt did that transpire?
So it was my father, actually. Okay. And so whenever I opened up about it, it was because I had ran away mm-hmm. from my home. And that's the reason why I had ran away from my home.
I'm curious, are your parents still together?
No.
Okay. Is he in the picture? Have you had any kind of contact?
No, we have not had contact with him. He did go to jail, and so no, we don't have
contact with him. Was it for the abuse?
Yeah, for that. Okay. We did go through the court and all that.
How was that? Because, I mean, like, do you feel like people believed you right away? Was it like, did you struggle with sharing that with other people?
Yeah, I actually have never talked about it with my family.
Yeah.
Only my mom and my brothers know, pretty much.
Yeah. Was it?
I don't know if anybody else knows or not, but.
I'm curious, and this is not to fault anybody in your family, but did anybody tell you not to say anything, or was that a personal choice?
That was a personal choice. I mean, as far as I was told not to say what was going on, obviously, by my dad. But And I was a very young girl. Yeah. Like when it started, my earliest memory was I was like probably 4 years old when he was molesting me and stuff like that.
So it was a long-term abuse.
Yes. Yeah.
And did your mom know or she no. just didn't know?
She just didn't know. And I just was scared, you know, to talk about it, to tell anybody because I was scared that he would tell me like, don't tell, you know, they're going to... put you in like jail and just like
or all CPS these things is gonna come
yeah
and
just all these scary fear. Things and so it was very scary and mm-hmm. I didn't want to
and was your dad like the primary breadwinner in the family?
Yeah, so it was a very traditional
Hispanic household
yeah. household. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And so like Adrian's dad, did he know?
Yes.
So he knew, and that's why like a big part of it was like getting away from that, right? Like just getting away from the court, from the life, from the abuse.
Yeah, from the abuse mainly. I just wanted it to be like, oh, I thought, you know, I was gonna get pregnant, leave my home and never have to go back. I thought they were gonna kick me out.
Wow.
And so things didn't work out that way. And I was like, well, I don't want to go back, though. Like, I just don't want to, you know, mm-hmm. and I just wanted to leave my home.
Yeah. Did he move to Midland because there was family there, or was it just like work or just like
random? Work.
Gotcha.
Work. He wanted to go out there for work, and his grandparents lived over there.
I'm curious, was he older?
No, he was the same age as me.
Same age as you guys? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys were both kids and having a kid, right?
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I'm really touched with you being able to share that because I don't think that people speak up about abuse as often, and especially coming from one of the people that we should trust, mm-hmm. right? And like someone so close to us that is kind of like a betrayal of our own body and like everything. And so I'm so glad that you share that with us. And I know it was hard for, I know it must've been hard for you to go through that, but I'm so glad that you spoke up. Did you tell, was it your mom that you told first or the police or?
Yes, my mom.
And then did she call the police or?
Yes, then we called the police.
And then she was like, okay,
yeah, my mom
done.
Did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he denied it or did he?
Yes, he did.
So in his head it was like, I didn't do that,
right?
And you said you mentioned like not being so close with your family but being really close with your mom and your brothers. And so now you moved to Midland. How is that distance like for you guys? Is it, because I mean for me, like I mean I and I've shared this openly, like I had a young mom. And that kind of caused us to bump heads because she was a kid when I was a kid. And I mean, her strength, like her resilience and like being independent, I love that she taught me that to work really hard. And then if we work really hard, you get to where you want to be. But I know for us, we had to heal our relationship, and that meant putting some distance in our relationship in order for me to heal. So I don't know if that was the same for you.
No, I'm really close with my mom and my brothers. I keep in touch with them very often. I just preferred to be on my own.
Yeah.
Because I felt like that's what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be with Adrian, and I wanted it to just be me and him.
And build a life together.
Yeah, like I wanted
away from all of the memories, right?
Yeah, I just wanted to move forward.
Yeah, and so you're a young mom, and you mentioned, like, having, like, some self-destructive behaviors, right. Like, growing up and then not living a healthy lifestyle. So how does not living a healthy lifestyle look for you? After, you know, being in the shelter and then like kind of going through school and being a mom, all that stuff.
An unhealthy lifestyle for me was just a lot of behaviors that were very self-destructive to not only my body, but my mind as well. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a lot of unhealthy eating, drinking a lot, engaging in activities that weren't nourishing me, that weren't helpful for my mind or my body. As far,
gotcha. And when did it like click? Because I know you're married now. Mm-hmm. And so I am curious to see how you found your hubby and just like how he's helped you throughout this process of healing and when you felt ready to share your life, you know, and your story with him, because that is difficult to share it with our significant yeah. others. Like, I know whenever I was getting to know my husband and sharing that part of me was very difficult to open up and show that vulnerability. So when did you meet your husband? Do you feel like you were still in kind of like unhealthy behaviors at that point and you all grew together and learned how to be healthier together? Or was it you were already kind of in the end of your like healing, not that there's an end to healing, but you were kind of like already in that healing process?
That is actually when I met my husband. That's when things really started shifting for me in a positive way. Mm-hmm. It was challenging, but it was positive.
Yeah.
It was only challenging because it was unknown to me.
Wow.
You know, it was just all very different, a very new experience for me, meeting someone that was not like me, that was different than me, you know? And so I was still very much needing healing. Mm-hmm. However, I wasn't really aware of how much.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
No, yeah, that makes total sense because, I mean, like, I feel like a lot of people feel like, oh, well, I'm not going to start dating until I'm fully healed. And I'm like, girl, you will be 80 till. Because yeah. we don't always, you know, it's not like, it's going through those feelings and and things trigger us, especially if we had things that impacted us when we were little, like you had. You still get triggers, and then opening up to someone who, for once, is showing us that life can be positive, that life can be great.
And safe.
You know, we talked to, like, you were in the panel. Yeah. We talked about finding someone who makes yeah. you feel safe.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing yeah. because you felt unsafe for a long time in your yes. home.
My own home, yes.
Yeah, from age of 4 mm-hmm. to when you moved with Adrian's dad and into Midland.
That was another unsafe situation.
Yeah, and then going to a shelter, which is safe, but at the same time, you're still like, anything can happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, I still have to protect myself and my son.
And if you think about it, I never really had the opportunity to heal because I went to counseling once I opened up about the abuse. I started mm-hmm. going to counseling, and then I stopped because I was really trying to graduate mm-hmm. high school. And so all my energy was placed mm-hmm. there, and I was in that abusive relationship. So that kind of cut that healing short, right? Yeah. Because then I was in that unhealthy relationship. And there was still so much that
you had to process.
Had to process. Yeah, pretty much my whole life, right?
Yeah.
And so even though after I left Adrian's dad, mm-hmm. I did do a lot of work. I did a lot of work. There were patterns, there was behaviors that I wasn't aware of that were attached to parts of me that were unhealed.
Wow.
And I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I didn't know that, but you just don't know.
When you're in the mess, there's no getting out of it. And like, and it takes, like, I feel like as a therapist, we're like these soldiers. And there's something that you put in your email, and I'll explain to her, like, why is Steph sending emails? I'll tell you why she's sending me emails. But so there was something that you send me in your email about, I'm going to be that person that holds the mirror for you when you can't hold it for yourself.
Right.
And that's what therapists, I feel, are too. Like, we are like warriors and people who will hold up that mirror for you so that you can clearly see yourself.
Yeah.
Because when you're in the crisis and the trauma, it's hard to mm-hmm. see yourself mm-hmm. as beautiful and so full of potential.
And because worthy.
Yeah, because somebody else took, it's like they took parts of you
yeah.
that weren't, you weren't ready.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, because that, like, he took an innocence that, you know, that you never were able to get back because you can't get that back.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's healing that inner child.
Yes, a lot of inner child work for sure. When I met my husband, I started because it was a safe place, I became aware of a lot of patterns that I had that weren't healthy, you know, as far as just needing to drink, you know, for to have fun, or just different things, that the anger, the sadness that would come up here and there, and
needing to numb the pain.
Right.
Yeah. And finding that as coping. Like, I think it's so easy for us to, like, food as comfort and alcohol as comfort. And I mean, especially in the Hispanic community, like, food is comfort food. Yeah. Like, when we like to party for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Like, you got an A, okay, mijo, we're going to have a party. We're going to have cake. Like, we're going to have all this. Like, it's always been, like, to celebrate something, even the littlest thing, in a way that may not be the healthiest or a healthy conscious decision, right? And so, like, when you're with your husband and you're like, oh my God, like, I do have these patterns and I see it, and I mean, I'm safe, so I'm safe to actually process this. So it was a moment for you to, like, be like, these are behaviors I don't want to. And you also had the motivation of your son, like, I don't want my son to see that these are positive behaviors.
Right. That was another, the thing is that once I got into this safe relationship, this just, he's such a calm, like, just so opposite than me, but in a good way. Like, he is my anchor. He's everything I needed that I didn't even know I needed. It's so weird. But it allowed me just to see that there was healing to be done. And so I started counseling again after I got married.
And has Adrian ever done counseling?
Yes.
Okay. And has he told you, like, he's had a positive experience, or has it been hard for him?
No, yeah, he's loved it, yeah.
Yeah, and something like, so I was curious because I know, and then probably this is totally off topic, but I know that you homeschool him.
Yes.
So, and that was a decision, like, it's been a year, right? Or like two years?
It's been 2 years.
What made y'all make that decision of homeschooling?
Well, there was just a lot of bullying at the schools, and just a lot of, Adrian was just having a really hard time following along and staying focused in school. And I really honored the fact that he has gone through a lot with me. You know, we've gone through a lot. Because we moved around a couple of times, he had to go to different schools. And so all those changes, I feel like, impacted him.
Yeah, for real.
And so I decided that it would be best for us to homeschool and for it to provide an opportunity for us to bond, to connect, and to help him learn at his own pace. So, yeah, those are the two main reasons. There's other reasons. Mm-hmm. My husband's work was also very weird. He would work 2 weeks and then be off 1 week. Mm-hmm. And so his schedule was really weird, and we wouldn't be able to spend time together. Mm-hmm. And so that was another reason at the time. But most importantly, me and Adrian wanted to just connect and bond, and also be able to provide him that safe space to be able to learn at his own pace. And
is he loving it?
He loves it, and I love it too. We have a curriculum that goes along with the school system's curriculum, and so that helps me know where he's at.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And so how do you, like, still implement, like, the socialization of, like, being with other kids and stuff like that? Do you guys have good friends that have kids, or?
Yeah, Adrian's very social.
Yeah.
That was actually one of his biggest struggles at school, as far as, like, he would just love to have fun and stuff and like that and talk. He's very much like me. I'm very social myself. And, you know, he, church, socialization, with me. We talk all day. Yeah. And then he has friends in our neighborhood that he plays with and stuff like that.
So. I love that. You mentioned church. So how has church helped you throughout your healing and like, and all that? Like, as I know you openly share, you know, about your faith. And so was there a time where you might have not believed that God was there or felt like, why me? And you know, when you're little and all that, like, how was that journey with, you know, getting closer to God and being part of a church and all that?
Yeah, we weren't actually, we grew up not so spiritual per se. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would go to church, but it wasn't, I don't know how to put it, it was different. Mm-hmm. But as an adult, growing up after everything happened, my mom did start going to a different church, and then that experience was different. But more than anything, my relationship with God and growing close to God has been what's anchored me and just helped me go through some of my toughest times. That really has been it for me. I don't know what would have been of me if I didn't have that anchor in my life.
Yeah. And that was, like, did that mean, like, you pursuing going to a church yourself? Or was it, like, maybe having conversations with God on your own or reading a book? How did that initial journey start for you?
Initially, it was through churches.
Yeah.
And then once I got deeper into my healing, it was more of a private encounter with God and just a relationship and just talking to God and praying and stuff
and like just that. Like letting him be your anchor through
letting him be my anchor through the dark times.
Oh, that's so great. I'm glad. I think so many people need that to be able to believe in something bigger than themselves.
Oh, yes.
That will ultimately guide them to do some of the best decisions that they can make for themselves or their loved ones. So I love that. When you started your health journey and even your healing journey, what do you wish you knew then that you didn't know now?
I wish someone would have told me to be open. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to just open up and to keep going even when it was hard. Because I would go, so once I started counseling at the shelter, I went while I was there the whole 3 months. Uh-huh. And then once I moved into the transitional home mm-hmm. program, I went for a while and then I stopped. Mm-hmm. And then I went back after a while and then I stopped again. Yeah. And then I stopped completely. And then I didn't go back until I got married. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just glad that first I went back.
Yeah.
Because now I know that it is supposed to feel hard.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
No.
It is a beautiful experience to heal, but it is not easy. It is tough. Things come up. And one thing that I've learned with healing is that it is in layers. Different things happen and things start surfacing up that you didn't know were mm-hmm. there. And so that's what I wish I knew, to hang in there when it was tough.
Yeah.
You know, and
did that ultimately help with your health journey, right? So like, you know, finding you know, meals that worked for you and like working out for, you know, for you. So because I feel like, you know, your own like mental healing ultimately affects everything else, right? Like your physical healing. So for you, because I know, so disclaimer, guys, me and Steph actually work together. Steph is my nutrition coach. And so a big part of like what she does is educate, you know, on making healthier conscious decisions. And a big thing that she does during our sessions is you talk about your own experiences and going through yo-yo diets and all that stuff. So like, how did that look like for you? Like, how did that start? When did you feel like you're like, okay, I'm going to start going to the gym and all that stuff?
So it did start when I was at the shelter, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I was trying to be healthier. Uh-huh. But at the time, I was doing it more because I wanted to change my body. Gotcha. Like, I wasn't, I wasn't happy with the way I looked, right? Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, as a single mom, things get hard with, like, money. And so then I would stop. And so then I would just, because I didn't know much about nutrition, I mean, like, that's another thing. I didn't grow up knowing what healthy eating looked like either. Mm-hmm. I just never really knew what to do and with healthy eating. So I was just kind of lost with the whole healthy eating stuff. So I did the best I could. But then I would like stop and, you know, and then I would get back on.
Yeah.
Try to lose weight.
So it's definitely a lot of like trial and error. And do you feel like now you're in a stage where you're like, okay, I still have growth, because I feel like everybody always has growth to do, but I feel content or happy about where my life is going and the people that I surround myself with.
Yes. So yes, I'm at a place right now where I've been working inwardly for such a long time that I've become so aware of how everything in my life has affected me and I've developed so much self-awareness of my behavior and just my little habits and things like that, that I'm at a place where I'm moving forward, you know, I'm moving forward, continuing to heal. And like I was telling you earlier, I think it's an ongoing journey, as well as our health journey, our healing and health, both are ongoing. We have to understand that we go at our own pace in both.
Like, we can't look at other people's journeys and say, okay, I'm going to follow to the T what this other person is doing.
Exactly.
Like, it comes, and you've taught me a lot of that as well. Yeah. Like, you know, giving myself grace and compassion with, and we talked about this too, like self-sabotage, that it's normal. And that, like, when you said that to me about how self-sabotage is normal in the fitness journey, and like, not the fitness journey, but like the health journey, I was like, it's like you gave me permission to like fail, but like not fail, but like gave me permission to make mistakes, because that's how I will learn.
Yes, that's how we become aware of our pattern. That's why you have a coach, because you're a coach, and that's why you have a therapist when you're healing, because we are that person to hold up that mirror, to remind you that you are making progress. Because sometimes we could get so in our head about, am I doing this right? Am I making progress? Or, oh my God, did I just ruin my whole progress? And it's not like that, you know? I heard one time this quote about, you know, what do you do when you have one flat tire? You don't go slash your other tires. Like, you just keep going. Yeah, like, you know, why would you do that? You just patch up the other one, or you fix it and you know, take it off, whatever, and you keep going. You're not just.
That's a great quote. I didn't even think of that. Yeah. That is so great. Yeah, like, gotta keep moving forward. Yeah, realistically, like, you're not going to slash off other three tires just so that everything can fit and you're just stuck in that situation. Yeah. Like, no, you're going to push through, figure it out, call somebody, walk to go get something fixed, like, you know, pull it apart. So
I think that's the key about having a therapist or a coach, someone that will witness your growth and that will
be there
be
for
that
you.
Mirror for you.
Yeah, be there for you. So tell me a little bit about some tips that maybe when somebody who's starting a healing journey or a health journey, I think they're both going in. Health is like, it's mental health, it's physical health. But what would you tell somebody their first step should be as far as like healing or, you know, like I said, health? What would be the first step?
To do some thinking and really be honest with themselves to accept and realize that there's patterns in their life. Mm-hmm. And to remember that they can do something about it, that they don't have to continue living that way, mm-hmm. that there is help out there, and that they don't have to feel stuck, because help is out there. We just need to get to a place where we're brave enough to ask for it, because that can change our life.
Yeah, I mean, that's what changed
your
life.
That's what changed my life, you know, reaching out for that help.
Yeah.
You know, and it is scary, but it is scarier to stay the same.
Oof, yes, it's scary to just like stay stagnant. I believe you. So Steph, I ask this question to everybody on my podcast, and it is, what is one thing that you wish people would talk about more that isn't talked about enough?
I think we should talk more about relationships growing apart and how to work through that. I don't think we talk a lot about it, and it happens.
Yeah.
And
do you mean like in friendships or like in general?
Friendships and also even family, yeah. Because there's friends and family sometimes that do not support you, mm-hmm. as you're going into healing or health, bettering your health. Mm-hmm. You know, our relationships shift, mm-hmm. and as we start doing the work for healing or health or better health. And so I think more people should talk about shifting relationships, growing apart.
What to do, right? Or like how to navigate, how do we accept that? Because that's like a loss too.
Yeah,
so I feel that too. I was very quick to like, and this is just something that I learned about like labeling someone as toxic, even a family member. But I posted something recently, somebody that shared, it's like, let's stop using the word toxic and put unhealed, right?
Right.
It's an unhealed person.
Right.
It's like, and we also need to notice when we have like toxic tendencies where, you know, and it's all because of unhealing. We haven't healed something that needs some healing.
Yes, that is so true. I really believe that. And I strongly believe we definitely do all have a story, and it may not be like mine. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's different, but I think that is part of life. Mm-hmm. We, along the way, you know, because there's been so many other things in my life that have hurt me, friendships, mm-hmm. relationships, and all that stuff. And so realizing that we all have a story, and that story impacts us, but that story doesn't have to define us, and that we can create our future. I think that's just beautiful, mm-hmm. to know that and to believe it and to live it, to in a sense take back our power, mm-hmm. and to move forward and to dream big and to make things happen and create the life you want.
Yeah, I love that. We have so much power, and I think like you said, taking it back and realizing that we have control over things, and we ultimately have control over the people who enter and exit our lives. Exactly. You know, so I think that's so powerful, Steph. Thank you so much for saying that. So I want to know, where can people find you? What do you do? You know, because I can, there's a whole episode where you can talk about what you do and
yes.
and like your whole process and stuff, but tell us like about your business. Like, where can people find you?
Yes, so thank you so much for asking that. I can be found online at healthylifestylewithsteph.com and on Instagram as your friend Steph. But what I do is I help people end the yo-yo diet lifestyle and help them build a healthy, sustainable lifestyle so that they can not only achieve weight loss, but energy, and just to feel better, and so they can live well, you know, so they can enjoy the other things in life that they do, and so they can do it with energy. And the program I offer is really customized. I meet my clients where they're at, work with them to find what's going to work best for them where they're at in in their life at that time, right? And I provide just a really high level of accountability and support for my clients. And so that's what I do with my program. And that's where I can be found.
Awesome. And right now, like, it is that 3-month program, right? So
yes, it's a 90-day healthy lifestyle transformation program where we go into, I go ahead and educate my clients on behaviors and principles that really help with shifting our mindset into living that healthier lifestyle that we don't ever have to feel like we're off or on.
Yeah, I love that. And it's kind of like, and I love this about your program, it's like structured, but also you hold space for for what happens in that week, right?
Yes, yes. We meet once a week and we, first of all, we celebrate our wins.
Yes.
Because no matter what, there's something good to celebrate, whatever it is for my clients. And then we go into, like you said, bringing up what challenges did they encounter and what are our next steps and what other options do we have? And, you know, so it's very customized and just very unique to each client, but the structure is there, but it's definitely flexible to meet my clients where they're at.
Awesome. Well, Steph, thank you so much for doing this. Like, you're going to be my last interview for the season. So I can't wait to post this episode because I feel like this is right. Like, it just, like, that's why we had to meet at the launch party so we can get to this point of sharing your story. And, like, I know it's going to touch so many people's lives.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great. I appreciate you inviting me to share my unhealthy life and to be able to come on here and share with y'all how things are a lot better and I'm in a good place in life and moving forward and with my healing and my health and helping others to do as well.
Yeah, you did the transformation, girl. Yes,
thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Cafe with Monica. If you enjoyed the episode, I want you to take a screenshot right now and share it on Instagram stories by tagging Cafe with Monica. This helps me spread the word so more and more people can hashtag just talk about it. Also, make sure to visit cafewithmonica.com to access the show notes and resources from this episode. I can't wait for you to listen to the next episode, so see you guys next time.